and welcome to the New Books Network. This is the Literary Studies podcast, and I'm Natalia, one of the hosts on the channel. Today, I will be speaking with Dr. Mark Andrejczyk, and we will be discussing his book, The Intellectual as Hero in the 1990s Ukrainian Fiction. Hello, Dr. Mark Andrejczyk, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Hello, hello, good morning, and thanks for having me on. Looking forward to discussing my book with you.
Thank you so much. Would you mind if we begin this interview with you saying a few words about yourself?
Sure. I work at Columbia University in New York City, where I administer the Ukrainian Studies program at the Harriman Institute, and I teach Ukrainian literature at the Slavic Department at Columbia. Ukrainian Studies program, what it entails is we organize Ukrainian courses at Columbia and series of events and conferences that take place at the university. One of the ongoing things that we've been organizing in what's been 9 years now is a contemporary Ukrainian literature series where we've been bringing over authors from Ukraine to meet with audiences in New York and in Washington, D.C. at the Kennan Institute, because they are a co-sponsor of this series. And that's been a very exciting initiative, and I'm happy to say that next year we'll be publishing an anthology of contemporary Ukrainian literature in English translation based on these evenings that we've had and these authors that we have brought over.
Thank you. That sounds great. And could you tell us a little bit about those recent, probably, meetings with Ukrainian writers?
Sure. Last year, they usually take place in the fall, in October or November. But last year, we had a young writer from Ukraine, Sofia Andruchovich. Mm-hmm. She lives in Kyiv, and she was reading from her award-winning novel, Felix Austria, which is being now translated to English, and it has been translated into German and I think Polish already as well. Other guests that have come over the last 9 years have been Taras Prochasko, Sergei Jadan, Ivan Malkovich, Yuri Andruchovich, Viktor Neborak, mm-hmm. Andrei Bondar, Sashko Boychenko, Andrei Kurkov, Mariana Sauka, and this year, next month, we're very excited to our newest installment of the program. We will have a writer, a poet, who lives in Kyiv, Luba Yakimchuk.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you will be publishing a new anthology on Ukrainian literature. Could you just mention a couple of names that will be included into this anthology?
Yes, this will be published by Academic Studies Press, and mm-hmm. like I said, hopefully next year. And, well, the names that I mentioned already will all be there, because it will exclusively feature authors that have presented in this series. So all those authors I just mentioned, I also mentioned some that I haven't. I don't remember if I mentioned Vasily Gabor or Andrei Bondar, Mariana Sauka, Yuri Vinichuk. I think we got all of them. So it's going to be a total of 15 authors.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Well, we're looking forward to this new publication.
Thank you. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So the title of your book is The Intellectualist Hero in 1990s Ukrainian Fiction. And in the introduction, with an intriguing title, Approaching the Post-Soviet Ukrainian Intellectual, or the word intellectual pronounced with an Ukrainian accent, you outline the concept the intellectual as diverse and multi-layered. Could you tell us a little bit about the diversity and multi-layeredness of the concept to the intellectual, and how did this interpretation shape your research?
Yeah, well, I'll backtrack a little bit to say why, you know, I took on this this task in, mm-hmm. of writing this book, and why I focused on this Ukrainian intellectual and how I defined it. I spent a lot of the 1990s in Ukraine working on various projects, and I was picking up, trying to keep up with all these new literary works that were being published, mostly early on in magazines and journals, but later in books. And I was focusing on prose, and I noticed a lot of the more intriguing and interesting works happened to feature Ukrainian intellectuals as protagonists. And I had never noticed this in Ukrainian literature before, that this was that so much focus was was given to this Ukraine intellectual. And that's when I decided it'd be interesting to see what kind of new prototypes of the Ukraine intellectual are presented in these literary works, and to work towards defining the term intellectual by tracing how these protagonists act in this prose while navigating their relationship with power and society. And by choosing the term intellectual, I had to kind of define what I meant from it. I took kind of maybe a bit narrower understanding of the term, but intellectual, as I refer to it, is to creative individuals. And these are artists and those, including critics and scholars, who devote their lives to analysis and interpretation of the creative activity of these individuals. And those are the type of intellectuals that actually were saturating this prose, and that's why I chose to focus on them.
Okay, thank you. And you mentioned that you spent the 1990s in Ukraine, and could you tell us a little bit about that stay in Ukraine and what you were researching in terms of maybe journals or texts, or maybe you were affiliated with some institutions in Ukraine?
Actually, it all started out quite interestingly. I'm a musician, and I was a DJ at Drexel University, at WKDU in Philadelphia, and I was interested in what was happening musically in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And I met some interesting people. I was mostly in Kyiv and in Lviv, and I met people representative of the music scene of the early 90s, mid 90s, and what became fascinating is how tightly woven the music scene was with the literature scene and with the visual arts scene. A lot of these new bands in Ukraine that I found to be most interesting were writing songs set to poetry by these contemporary writers who were their friends and colleagues, and then often visual artists from that scene would design books for these writers and album covers for these musicians. So it was a really interesting, tightly knit scene. And so it was through music that I was mostly pulled into literature. And I just thought that there was very exciting things happening. And as I mentioned at the beginning, I just started trying to get my hands on things that were published. Initially, again, things were, a lot of these works, both poetry and prose, but we're talking about prose today, in journals such as Chetver was a very interesting journal that was published in Ivano-Frankivsk, where a lot of this new prose would debut, and also probably the central journal, more formal journal, published in Kyiv, called Suchasnist, mm-hmm. Contemporary Scene.
Mm-hmm. I find this connection between music and literature very interesting. As far as I remember, the music scene in the 1990s was very diverse and very tumultuous. Could you give us just a couple of names of Ukrainian bands, probably, or Ukrainian singers that somehow inspired you for this pursuit of this topic, the intellectual, or somehow influenced your research?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'd say two of the main bands that were tied with the literature scene that I got close with were two bands. One was called Plach Yeremi, Jeremiah's mm-hmm. Cry. The other was Mertvi Pivin, Dead Minister. And Plach Yeremi was led by Taras Chubai, whose father was kind of a leader of this literary cultural underground in Soviet Lviv in the late 60s and early 70s, and then a wonderful poet who unfortunately died quite young. And Taras was writing songs to his father's poetry, and the poetry is beautiful, and Taras's interpretations were quite beautiful. So that was a huge influence and kind of sparked my curiosity. And then Taras, as well as Dead Rooster, Mertvi Pivin, also wrote songs of contemporary poets, mostly writers from the Bubabu literary trio, Yuri Andruchovich, Viktor Neborak, and some on Sashko Irvanetsits, but also other writers as well.
Mm-hmm. That sounds wonderful. Yeah. Well, so let's get back to our discussion of your book, and the time period that your book covers is the 1990s. And I would like to speak a little bit about that time period in terms of history. And since Ukrainian literature appears to respond to the changing environment, on the one hand, that was the collapse of the Soviet Union, and on the other hand, it was the emergence of an independent country. So could you describe the 1990s historically, just to introduce us to the multiple artistic searches of Ukrainian writers that were emerging during the time period?
Yeah, like I said, it was a fascinating time, and I was happy to be there then to witness some of these changes. Well, you know, of course, you had Glasnost in the second half of the 1980s and this loosening of rules on culture and in general, and the eventual collapse of the Soviet Union. And what it meant for Ukrainian literature was, for the first time in a long time, in Ukraine, Ukrainian literature was freed from confines and rules that were assigned to it quite strictly. And this generation of writers that I focus on in my monograph, this Vesnyakniki or 80s generation, 80ers, they happened to be that generation that was beginning to write at this time in the late 80s and 90s, and they became kind of the first generation to lead Ukrainian literature in independent Ukraine. So what's happening in Ukraine? Not only do you have this freedom for these writers to write whatever they want and whatever style they want, which was not really possible earlier, but you have sudden access to the world and to world culture, which had been closed off, mm-hmm. And that was a very exciting and chaotic and head spinning mm-hmm. development. But also one very important factor also that was in place at this time was you have this rehabilitation of previous cultural achievements, Ukrainian cultural achievements, and not just Ukrainian, but for these writers. What I mean by that is a lot of Ukrainian writers whose works were suppressed during the Soviet Union for many, many years suddenly there was more access to them. Books were being published where, even if some works had been allowed by these writers previously, now there was access to more of these works, and there was actually some critical analysis of these works. So, I mean, it's really interesting. You can just even look at what books were being published. So, just to recap, you have previously banned Ukrainian literature anthologies starting to show up in bookstores or single books. Then you have slowly translations of world literature of books that were previously closed off to the world. And then you have these books by contemporary writers. And so this is all happening at once, which added to the excitement.
Right. I was impressed by that section where you discussed the previous stages of the Ukrainian literature, and some works were either banned or they were presented through some Soviet propaganda. Uh-huh. And on the other hand, there was a very strong influence of critical analysis and literary criticism, so to speak, when some works were presented through some communist ideology or Soviet ideology, and probably the perception of those texts was somehow distorted or shaped according to that ideology. Could you tell us just a little bit about that influence of, so to speak, Soviet criticism on Ukrainian texts or Ukrainian writers during the 80s, for example, during even the 70s?
Well, again, I mean, like you mentioned, a lot of works were banned. A lot of the more interesting works were banned, and what was published, by the Writers' Union of Ukraine and sanctioned were, not the best things that were being written in the Ukraine language at the time. A lot of these writers who later began publishing their works in the 90s were, writing for the drawer. They were not publishing this where they would distribute it, just among friends. And that would get you in trouble, especially, in the 60s and in the 70s. And that's exactly what happened to Hrysko Chubai, Taras Chubai's father, as leader of this underground circle, which included such important people as Viktor Morozov and Mykola Ryabchuk, and Oleg Lysheha, later Yuri Vinichuk, was they had published a journal called Skrinya, The Chest, which was fully apolitical. It was just, non-conformist journal about free art and free expression and free thinking. And it was for that journal that Shaha and Morozov were thrown out of university because their works were published there, and Chubai was marginalized for the rest of his life. And so that was what was not being published officially. What was being published officially, and like you mentioned, was presented through a prism of Soviet ideology, was, first of all, for Ukrainian literature, it was it was very rarely you saw any Ukrainian literature that was published officially in Soviet times where you had a Ukrainian intellectual. You very seldom had Ukrainians set in some kind of urban situation, yes? And it would be more of a rural setting. General rules as to what could be presented, what could be referenced, alluded to. This whole Ukrainian modernism and world modernism, had been cut off, and expressions of the individual were not freely. You couldn't do it freely in the Soviet sanctioned works.
So one more question about Ukrainian intellectual, which is probably not very closely related to your research of the 1990s, but still. So what's your opinion on this particular topic, on this particular aspect during the 1920s when the Soviet regime was getting stronger and but at the beginning of the 1920s, there was some probably euphoric, like you mentioned in your research, part one, euphoric anticipation maybe of some new environment, or maybe some hopes and some expectations. But of course, they disappeared quite quickly. So did you do any research on this particular topic? I mean, the Ukrainian intellectual within the 1920s?
I have researched the 1920s. I even focused on the Ukrainian intellectual as I did in, in my monograph here on contemporary works, but I do teach a course at Columbia on that period. And that was a fabulous, very exciting period for Ukrainian culture, visual art as well, and music. And for literature, first and foremost, you had writers writing in various styles and having a good, healthy polemic, which only helped to raise the quality of their works. You had the city of Kharkiv was a major center then for this activity. You had journals, you had exciting collaborations happening among various writers and artists, visual artists. So it was a fascinating time. And for Ukrainian literature, if we're talking about prose, then you had interesting characters. You had protagonists in these works. In fact, what I'm making is this reconnection that these 80ers, the contemporary Ukrainian mm-hmm. writers, were doing was reconnecting with this Ukrainian modernism. And a big part of that was the writers from the 20s whose works were being republished at the time in the late 80s and early 90s. But also with writers, emigre writers, like the New York group in the United States, who kept Ukrainian modernism alive mm-hmm. in the years of the Soviet Union.
And what happened to that vibrant cultural environment back in the 1920s?
Well, what happened was, you know, initially there was a policy of Ukrainization mm-hmm. That was implemented in order to get the message of Soviet ideology to the Ukrainian peasant, and so, you know, it was supported by the government. Again, journals, there was financial support for Ukrainian literature, and in the beginning there weren't many constraints on it, but it got too good, it became, like I mentioned, it was a very good polemic, and great works were being written, and then as, you know, the 20s came to an end and literature was being, command of Soviet literature was being increasingly centralized, and the Writers' Union was established, then this was put to an end, and strict rules were enforced of what Soviet literature, including Soviet Ukrainian literature, was to do, and unfortunately, most of the representatives of this cultural rebirth, Ukrainian cultural rebirth, were executed.
Mm-hmm. So this revival of cultural life, you also discuss in your book, and I would like to talk a little bit about the structure of your book. I find it very interesting. It has three parts, euphoria, chaos, and community. And these three parts, to some extent, reflect the stages of Ukrainian literature development during this time period. On the other hand, it also somehow represents the changing moods during this time period that that were observed in the Ukrainian community. So, could I? And then each part has some subtitles, and here you discuss new prototypes of the Ukrainian intellectual. Some of them are very interesting. The swashbuckling performer, the ambassador to the West, the sick soul. Could you tell us a little bit about these different masks of the Ukrainian intellectual and about these stages that you identify in the Ukrainian literature of this time period?
Sure, yeah. Again, like I mentioned at the outset, I was looking, you know, were there any new prototypes of Ukrainian intellectuals presented by this post-Soviet prose? And these are the three that I found in this mm-hmm. prose. The swashbuckling performer is a Ukrainian intellectual as being the center of some kind of interesting event. This is intellectual that this is an individual that people want to listen to, that crowds adhere to, almost like a rock star, almost like an action hero. And this we see primarily in the prose of Yuri Andruhovich, his first three novels. And this Ukrainian intellectual as an individual that somebody aspires, that looks up to, and has this power of performance, and this power of performance allows him to enchant the audience. So that was a new prototype that I found in the prose. The second prototype, the ambassador to the West, was what you found in these works. In many of these works, were these protagonists, intellectuals, were sent to the West, and in these fictional works, we see how they react to the West, what their perceptions are, how they find what is compatible to them, what is not, what is strange, what did they think they would find there. So you also have this reporting to the Ukrainian reader about the West. Mm-hmm. What they found there, but probably most importantly, you have a sense of what happens with contact with the West and what the West knows or doesn't know about Ukraine. And much of this is based on real life, because in the early 90s, a lot of the these writers, these 80 years writers, were among the first people to getting invited to universities, and they did spend time in the West. So it's not strange that they ended up creating characters that maybe could express some of the things that they experienced there. So that's a very important character, which of course we couldn't have had in Soviet Ukraine literature, this ambassador to the West, because of course the West is what everybody was fascinated with then. But then you have the third and quite prevalent protagonist in these works of the Ukrainian intellectual is a sick or abnormal individual. You have a lot of alcoholism, you have a lot of self-destruction, you have a lot of allusions to sickness, that something's not quite right, that to be an Ukrainian intellectual is just, you're off kilter to begin with. And we see a lot of these characters, these sick characters who are suffering the fate of their people through these characters. So that's the third prototype.
And what about this third section, community?
Well, you mentioned the three sections, euphoria, chaos, and community. And it's important to say that, understand that these three tendencies, they often intertwined, they coexisted, and they conflicted, of course. And when I mention euphoria, I'm talking about the deconstruction of inherited myths, this destruction of authority, of rules, celebration of freedom to proceed with deconstruction, this revelry, this party, deconstructive revelry is what I call one of the subsections. But then you have this chaos, this kind of sense of disappointment, disillusionment, and a return to the margins. If you have the Ukrainian intellectual as the central figure in this euphoria, because they knew the West the best, because they did have some access to this unofficially. If you have this swashbuckling performer, you have this person traveling to the West, and you have this Ukrainian intellectual at the center, here he's or she's returned to the margins, and you get the sense of this disappointment and sense of a lost generation. And then there's a lot of contradictions here, because you have this need for some kind of structure that you just dismantle. And this is where this community comes. That there's a need for a sense of structure that is not totalitarian, that is not that is flexible, that is playful, but that nonetheless gives you a sense of community. And this arena of contradictions, this battle between freedom structures, is a balance, is a search for balance compatible with this post-Soviet Ukraine identity.
So, like you mentioned, during this time period, Ukraine became open to the West, and on the other hand, the West became open to Ukraine. So, probably it will be correct to say that Ukrainian literature was somehow responding to the international, so to speak, developments of literature. And it was the time period when postmodernism was still quite strongly shaping many literatures. Could we talk a little bit about this postmodernism presence in Ukrainian literature. In your book, you identify that the perception of postmodernism was quite controversial. On the one hand, Ukrainian writers were quite enthusiastic about those possibilities that postmodernism would present them with. On the other hand, there was some resistance or some maybe negative won't be the correct word, but like cautious attitude toward that trend. On the other hand, Ukrainian audience, as you specify, was also quite not quite ready to receive this postmodern text. Could you talk about this aspect a little bit, about these controversies of postmodernism reception in Ukrainian literature during this time period?
Yeah, sure. Like I just mentioned previously, a lot of this deconstruction of rules and of systems that was inherited. And it's important here to also mention that they were not just deconstructing the Soviet or colonial legacy, but they were also deconstructing the Ukrainian national legacy and what was required, what was expected of a Ukrainian writer, because there were rules there as well. Obviously, not as strict as the Soviet, but rules nonetheless that these writers decided to need to free themselves from. You know, the serving the nation and also strict themes of what could be written. So they also dismantled that, the idea of a truth mm-hmm. in a work, a narrative, the truth, you know, the authors, and language itself. And yes, it was controversial. And there were not all writers in Ukraine writing in the 90s did this. But adopted postmodernism. But there were groups that were quite, actually, it was negative. They were criticized very much for this. There were young writers, their colleagues, who said that this isn't right for Ukrainian literature. We need to, you know, don't just copy the West. Why are you just copying the West? We need to find something that's organic. Mm-hmm. So there was a debate there. And audiences, if we're talking about audiences, then sure, they were, there was very negative reactions to this. Just as an example, the journal that I mentioned earlier, Suchasnyi's, the contemporary scene, it used to be published in the Soviet times. It was the top intellectual Ukraine journal. It was published in Munich and then transferred to New York. And then when Ukraine became independent, it moved to Kyiv, and the first issue that was published in Ukraine, it's very interesting because it wasn't just a literary journal. Many things were covered by the journal, but on the cover of that first Kyiv version of Suchasnyi's, you had a picture of Leonid Kravchuk, mm-hmm. the president of Ukraine then, and the first prose work that was in there was Yuri Andruhovich's Recreations, and a lot of subscribers to this journal that made it possible were people, emigres, many of them a bit older. And there was a lot of negative criticism thrown at Suchasnyi's and at the literary editor at that time, Mykola Rybchuk, who was part of Chubai's literary underground in the 60s and 70s, that he published Andruhovich on the pages, and nasty letters were written, canceling subscriptions, and so there was a lot of backlash also outside of Ukraine for this new literature. But mm-hmm. playful and postmodern as Andruhovich and the Boo 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 were, was they actually utilized some of these letters when these books were published and quoted them, saying how horrible these works are. And when the Recreations was finally published as a book, then it included some of these nasty letters.
Mm-hmm. So you just mentioned that some Ukrainian writers or even some Ukrainian readers believe that postmodernism is not right for Ukrainian literature and that they need something more organic. So could you explain that a little bit? What is not right for the Ukrainian literature and what is right for the Ukrainian literature according to those Ukrainian writers who were quite careful about this adoption of postmodernism in Ukraine?
Yeah, there was expressed the idea that the Ukrainian literature needs to do something for the Ukrainian people. Mm-hmm. Ukrainian literature is now free. Ukraine is now free, and there has to be a spiritual aspect to it. It has to be looking inwards, finding something that's uniquely Ukrainian. Again, not copying what they consider to be Western styles, the playfulness of a lot of this literature was also seen as not appropriate. The dismantling of the Ukrainian national rules that I mentioned was also seen as not right. Why would they be doing that now when Ukraine's finally free? Why are they attacking that as well? Mm-hmm. So it was an idea that Ukraine is not quite ready yet for this play, that the West maybe has, that we need to first build some foundation. Now we have an opportunity to do this, but these writers are playing with this so-called postmodernism, and they were accused of doing this only to get published and invited to the West. So those were the main criticism about this. Mm-hmm.
And where would you locate the role of tradition in this conversation about what is right, what is not right for Ukrainian literature? Because in your book, you also discuss the combination of new searches and incorporation of literary traditions while searching for, again, for something new or for something maybe more organic for Ukrainian literature or more unique for Ukrainian literature.
Well, yeah, in a lot of what these writers were criticized for and for playing with the idea of what the Ukrainian tradition requires of the Ukrainian writer, and this need to serve the nation, and which was always, you know, a big part of it since Ukrainian literature, as it came out with, you know, this was always a requirement, except for very few periods of time. This was kind of the dominant tradition of mm-hmm. Ukrainian literature, and these writers played with that idea. Mm-hmm. But for them, it was as essential as shaking off any colonial or Soviet rules. It was about being freely expressing oneself in art. And of course, you know, they are serving the Ukrainian people and the nation, if you want to call it that way, by writing good literature and creating a vibrant Ukrainian culture that people may be interested in outside of Ukraine. So you know, it was kind of a narrow way of looking at this writing by saying that they're rejecting tradition, because of course they are part of the tradition. It's just a different approach to it, taking advantage of the situation and the freedom allotted to them.
Right. So Ukrainian literature means that literature is written in the Ukrainian language. Maybe some writers were using some different language, like Russian, but I would like to talk a little bit about the role of language in this conversation about Ukrainian literature of the 1990s. And of course, to some extent, it's a part of the conversation about postmodernism, but on the other hand, it's a very specific discussion in the context of Ukrainian community, because when we talk about languages in Ukraine during this time period, we also mean not only Ukrainian language, but the Russian language as well, and the coexistence of these two languages in the territory of Ukraine is quite long and complicated. But specifically for this period, this coexistence appeared to be quite significant and important. And it also contributed not only to the development of Ukrainian literature during this time period, but also to some identity formation. So would you make a couple of comments about the Ukrainian language during this time period and about the perception of the Ukrainian language during this time period and how writers were using the language to deliver their messages and to shape probably new identity or to deliver this new searches in the context of changing environments?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, when you mentioned at the beginning of this question about Ukrainian literature written in the Ukrainian language, you know, you can define Ukrainian literature in many ways. Literature that is written by a Ukrainian citizen, you know, to broader even Ukrainian literature written out, you know, outside Ukraine, but Ukrainian language. So, you know, there's many ways of defining this, but for the purposes of my book, I focused on writers that write in Ukrainian, because that was an essential part of what they explored in this, and the language itself, like you mentioned, and the kind of this postmodern dismantling of language in general, but also this specific force, this specific issue of the Ukrainian language is such an essential part of these prose works that it had to be explored this way. Ukrainian language, as you mentioned, has a complex history in Ukrainian lands. Its existence was denied, it was banned by actual Tsar's decrees. When it has been allowed to be used in culture, it was curtailed, it was co-opted and standardized. Its unique features were diminished. When you would have Ukraine dictionaries, Soviet Ukraine dictionaries, would omit a perfectly good Ukrainian word, but replace it with just the Ukrainian sounding version of a Russian word for it, let's say. So, certain letters were removed from the alphabet. And how Ukrainian language people were presented in Soviet culture, kind of as these country bumpkins or marginals, the Ukrainian language was made an issue already. So as a subject in these works, as a theme, it's important for these writers to take it on. And they do that. Oksana Zabushko, one of the writers I focus on in the book, mentioned in an essay, choosing to write in Ukrainian language, at the time in the 80s, basically you're choosing to write in a language that's eventually going to die out. Right. Nobody knew at the time that Ukraine would be free, but that's the way it was heading. So it's not a logical choice. So it's already some kind of choice made for another purpose. And that's why these criticisms of these writers for not serving the Ukrainian cause, seem kind of ridiculous when just choosing to write in the language, unfortunately, comes with all this baggage. So, and this is kind of what I'm talking about this. This things that contradict one another. So you have these writers trying to get away from this baggage that comes with writing the Ukrainian language and creating Ukrainian literature and be free. But on the other hand, they know that this comes with it and they try to play with it, but they cannot distance themselves from it because they are writing in this language and because of the complex history of this language. So, and that's a very essential part of this Ukrainian literature that I'm focusing on, the issue of the Ukrainian language.
You primarily focused on the 1990s for your research, and what about the perception of the language, the Ukrainian language, and of the topic that you raised in your research, the Ukrainian intellectual, in the 21st century, the beginning of the 21st century? Could you make a couple of comments on the very current trends, and if you observe any other new masks of the Ukrainian intellectual, or any other different approaches to the Ukrainian language at present moment?
You're asking to comment on a later generation of literature.
Right.
There's less of. There's less of preoccupation to compare them with the 80s writers. This idea of the West it's approached differently. For example, when Serhii Zhadanz, who's a bit younger than these writers, when his first book of prose was published, he sends his protagonist to Europe, but he's not having all these. He's not suffering from all this these contacts with people in the West that are ignorant of Ukraine. He's sitting on a bench drinking beer in Vienna, and he's happy with that. So this idea of making this contact and exploring that is no longer necessary. In the same ways as the deconstruction that took place in the 90s by these writers, there's no need to do that anymore. Opening up new themes that can be explored in Ukrainian literature, dismantling a lot of these rules. The younger writers don't need to do that anymore because it's been done. It was done by this generation, writing freely about sex, or a woman writing about sex and using slang words in literature. There's no need to do that. Where in these works of the 90s, you see that it coming through, that these writers need to do that. So you have less of that. Some new tendencies in the literature now, these newer writers. It's interesting. A lot of themes that were presented in the 90s, themes such as nostalgia, yes?
Mm-hmm, right.
Nostalgia for a pre-Soviet kind of Ukraine or Ukraine identity. It's being challenged in works and revisited and critiqued in works. One interesting tendency you see is several books that I've read in the last couple of years that have come out. You have a character set in present times and a character set in the past. And it's an interesting way of revisiting Ukrainians' history and past in contemporary and commenting on it. So I've seen that recently. I'm being very general here.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in the last 2 years, we've had a lot of literature written about the war in Eastern Ukraine. Themes such as volunteering popping up, anthologies about volunteering. So that, of course, is a new thing in Ukraine literature.
Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to the emergence of new characters and new characters in Ukrainian literature. Well, thank you so much for this fascinating discussion of your book, Mark.
And thank you, Natalia. Thank you very much for your great questions.
And thank you so much for being with us today.